I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. That's it. Now the anti-ICE activists have really done it. They've really pissed me off. Plus, Republican state lawmakers say two bills they introduced previously would have stopped the self-dealing we described in our exclusive whistleblower report. And major job cuts ahead for Amazon, what it means for our state and the region, that and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. That's how this show exists. That's how the show is possible. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I had a whole different opening to the show planned today. I was going to talk a little bit more about what's happening at the ICE facility in Portland from the perspective of, you know, what's going to happen with the riots and the protests and the occupation and all of that, because I got an opportunity on Saturday to go into the ICE facility, speak with some agents. And so I was planning on, you know, doing that today with this side little footnote of this story I stumbled upon while I was in the ICE facility. But the more I dug into that small side little footnote of a story, and then I shared a little bit of it on social, the angrier I am. And I'm genuinely, like I told Nicole before the show, I don't know if I should say this or could say this, I think this is how vigilantes are formed. This is something that makes you so angry. It makes so little sense that you're like, man, I really want to take matters into my own hands with these people. I'm not going to, of course, because I am nothing if not peaceful. But I've decided that this thing I thought was a small little footnote, I'm going to lead the show with today. And we'll talk more about what's happening with ICE Portland tomorrow. But so I'm in the ICE facility, right? And I'm getting a look at, you know, some of their perches for where they're looking at the rioters and the protesters. And then they say, hey, do you want to go talk to the soup ladies? I'm thinking the soup ladies are here. So if you're not familiar, the soup ladies are like a fixture definitely around the Pacific Northwest, but now across the country. And they're these elderly women. And maybe I shouldn't call all of them elderly, older women, some of them grannies. And they decided years ago that they were going to start feeding first responder soup. And it's like the sweetest thing. They're a nonprofit. You'd be familiar with them when there's like a natural disaster or some sort of situation where law enforcement is on scene for an extended period of time. They show up in their cute pink truck and they bring soup with them. And it's that innocent. That's what they do. So apparently the soup ladies, the day I was there, were at the ICE facility in Portland. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what a cute little story. You know, all the ICE agents and the Federal Protective Service agents were getting soup and talking to them. And it was just this really sweet moment. But then I got a chance to pull Ginger Passarelli aside, who is the founder of Soup Ladies. And she informed me that because they were at the ICE facility, they were dealing with a bunch of threats and harassment.
I don't think you can put it on TV what they've been saying. It's been awful. We feed first responders. That's all we do. When people are stuck on scene and they can't leave, we get them healthy, hearty meals. I've had over 100 phone calls from midnight last night till now. I've had over 100 phone calls from the people out on the street.
Saying what?
Bad things.
How'd they know you were here?
Because they've been taking pictures of our truck when we come and go. So, and they went on the website. My number is the only one on the website.
And you also, I don't know if you're willing to say this, but you have people in your family who are law enforcement.
Yes.
So what does it mean to you, especially this environment, this political environment for these agents? What does it mean for you to be able to help them in this way?
You know, I'm so grateful for them. They keep the peace so that I can sleep in my bed at night and not have to worry. That's what they do. They're heroes. They are heroes. Yeah. And well, I love them so much.
You've been seeing them every day. Are you sure they're not Nazi fascists?
Well, I'm pretty sure not. Yeah. No, they're, and I'm not either.
Yeah.
I'm not a Nazi fascist.
What has this world come to? And you can tell she's heartbroken. I'm not a Nazi fascist. They're not Nazi fascists. They're there. Older women, grandmothers, serving soup to these Federal Protective Service agents in particular. It was cold and rainy day, who've been in and out dealing with the nonsense Antifa, doing it for 140 days. And so the hate against the soup ladies seems to stem from this Instagram video.
Soup ladies, huh?
A soup ladies.
Soup ladies. Going soup in to lady. Feed.
Oh, this is gonna
the
good.
Gestapo, the Temu Gestapo.
Soup ladies,
how disappointing.
So this Instagram loser posts that, puts Ginger's phone number and email information on it, and sets all the haters loose. And there were a couple under that Instagram video things. Voicemail is full, LOL. Their review section is still available on Google, though. She answered and then blocked me. I've left 20 voicemails so far. Just called her and she said, "Why are you so mad?" Look how proud they are of themselves for harassing elderly women. These people are truly disgusting, despicable human beings. And I know they've done a lot of disgusting, despicable things, and maybe I shouldn't expect better of them, but this might be one of the worst things they've done. And I've been assaulted by them. I actually think this is far worse, because it just shows how genuinely unhinged you are. So they're absolutely inundating Ginger's phone with nasty, hateful voicemails to the point where now the voicemail is full. They are going on Google, giving them horrible reviews, because they also do some catering stuff that's not just like the volunteerism that they do. And Ginger used to own a restaurant. And then here's their Facebook page. I just went to it to check in because I was like, somebody said that they were inundating their Facebook with negative reviews, and they are. Rachel Marie doesn't recommend the soup ladies. They deliver straight to ICE agents. Michelle Anderson, soup made by Nazis, no thank you. Shanoa Lee, tastes like shit. Tracy Parker Willits, yeah, I'm using your names because you guys are losers. The soup ladies feed the Nazis in Portland. Boycott these bitches. Oh, like, seriously, what level of unhinged do you have to be? Do you think the ICE agents and the Federal Protective Service agents are just in there not eating? Like, somebody's going to feed them. They're going to get food from somewhere. So if they, I don't know, stopped on their way into work and picked up Jimmy John's, are you going to boycott Jimmy? What is this? Adam Scott, the soup Nazis helping ICE destroy families. They should lose their nonprofit status for being demons. Amanda Dixon, despicable. Supporting and feeding anti-American Gestapo who are kidnapping people off the streets with no due process. Dawn Chapel, they serve bad soup. Actually, I had some. It's pretty delicious. And they say they support the people. Then they bootlick for ICE while they kidnap people and destroy lives. I mean, these really are bottom of the barrel human beings. And here I am thinking like, oh, I'm going in there. And it was so sweet. I mean, the ICE agents and the Federal Protective Service, you know, they're giving Ginger, and there's these two older women in there with Ginger, giving them hugs and thank you so much. And again, it was just blistering outside and it had been raining for like 2 days straight. And you can't tell from the outside looking in, but these Federal Protective Service agents who are marching out, confronting these protesters on a regular basis, they're like spending most of their time outside. There's like this big kind of open air area and it's freezing in there. So they go in to get some soup. And now these poor soup ladies, because their vehicle was spotted going into the ICE facility, now their Google reviews are horrible. Their Facebook reviews are horrible. I think it's like down to like a 66% approval rating. There's people trying to like say their nonprofit status should be revoked. And I think the worst is she's getting all these direct calls of hate. And she's just the sweetest woman. I mean, Ginger has been helping law enforcement in Washington State going back years and years and years. I think I even remember them being at the Oso landslide after that happened and making sure that first responders had soup. I don't know that I've been this pissed off about something in a really long time. And I'm just like, what can we do? Here's what I would recommend. You can make a small donation to them if you'd like. You know, help them out. I'm sure that that would be a good way to stick it to the Antifa types because it is a nonprofit. But also, we got to help them boost their online reviews back up. Because there's way more of us sane people who appreciate everything they do than there are of these insane keyboard warriors who want to go after some good-hearted elderly women because they're feeding the wrong type of first responders. Oh, can't feed ICE. It's just crazy. And call them demons. No, you're a demon. You're genuinely a demon. And like I said, I now know why people resort to vigilante violence, because some people are absolutely unhinged and things make no sense and up is down and right is left. And you just want to improve the world. But don't do that, of course. I'm just saying now I understand it a little bit, but obviously don't resort to that. Just wild. So go give the soup ladies a little extra love today if you can, because they need it. And they're down there and they're doing what they love to do and they've been doing for years and they've been doing without controversy for years. And now because it's ICE agents and federal agents, they're getting hate for it. So anyway, I'll talk about the other stuff that happened at the ICE facility tomorrow in Portland. We've got the court hearings happening today anyway, and so we'll dive into that tomorrow and a little bit of the conversations I had behind the scenes. But that little side story is now turned into the main story of the day because it's just rage-inducing. All right, a follow-up to our exclusive whistleblower report that we published yesterday. The headline, Whistleblower State Equity Program Became a Fund for Personal Enrichment. In it, we detailed really at length the extent to which the community reinvestment program in Washington state has been abused by the BIPOC nonprofits that were contracted with the state to carry the program out. In many instances, we detailed just a small fraction of those instances and focused just on one of the BIPOC nonprofits, in this case, the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle. We focused on instances where they'd taken this taxpayer money, they were given contracts to get out to the community, and used it for themselves, for their family members, for their friends, helped enrich their friends. And as I said, this is really such a small fraction of the money pushed out as part of the global reinvestment or the community reinvestment program. There was $200 million initially. There's another $50 million in the latest round of funding. And without some sort of formal state investigation and audit, we really will not know the extent to which that $250 million was spent on people who are well connected to BIPOC nonprofits. So we have been, and I have been, inundated with tips from people who say they have more information on wrongdoing in the community reinvestment program. So we are busy looking into all those. We are definitely going to have multiple follow-ups on this story. But one thing came up that I just looked at and I thought, well, of course they did. So it turns out Republicans in Olympia kind of already knew that these safeguards weren't in place to protect, to make sure that money spent on funds like these was traced and wasn't being abused. They already knew. And so they'd already previously tried to introduce bills that would have prevented any of this from happening. Can we go to Travis Couture? So State Representative Travis Couture, Republican representing Allen, he put out a post yesterday after a report dropped, and he said, "I wish I could say I'm surprised, but this kind of corrupt activity is pervasive in Washington. It's why I introduced House Bill 2058 and 2059 to hold private entities accountable when they receive state dollars. These two bills would have prevented every corrupt activity mentioned in the article." So he calls out two specific bills that were introduced both in the 2025 regular session. So this is this past session, this year. So, and it's just crazy. It's like, first of all, who votes against a bill like this? I want you to think about that as I describe it, right? So this bill, House Bill 2058, an act relating to third-party audits of private entities receiving public money. So in it, it would say any private entity that receives public money through grants must hire a third-party auditor to conduct an audit of the entity. The third-party auditor must receive approval from the state auditor to conduct the audit. An audit performed under this section must include the following information: the total amount of state and federal money received, itemized accounting for how all public monies were spent, evaluation of financial statements, verification of proper allocation and use of public money, review of the effectiveness and outcomes of programs funded by public money, evaluation of whether the use of public money achieved the intended goals and objectives. Democrats refused to move that bill. Even, well, did they know? Do they know? They have to know, right? So Democrats, the best way that I've heard the Department of Commerce and how these contracts have been used, and I can't remember who told me this, but it's basically USAID for Democrat-aligned nonprofits. It's basically like you know, all the global that Doge went after for sending out millions and billions of our dollars overseas to like feel good programs and stuff. And then nobody tracks it down. That's essentially what's happening with state contracts that have been run through the Department of Commerce. And so Democrats are the ones choosing which organizations benefit, which ones don't, which causes benefit, which ones don't. Then they award the contracts to their friends and their allies, and they all profit from it, and there's no oversight. So this tells you everything you need to know. The fact that they won't pass a basic bill, which in this case would say, hey, there's got to be audits of where this money is going, and God forbid, we have to look into whether the program achieved the intended results. No, Democrats said, no, thank you. Then the second bill he said, again, from this past legislative session, House Bill 2059, an act relating to requiring certain disclosures from private entities that receive state funding. Oh, gee, what kind of disclosures are these? All private entities that receive either as grantee or subgrantee a grant that is funded in whole or in part by state funds must disclose on its website or other publicly accessible means the following information within 5 business days of being awarded the grant. The name of each employee of the private entity and wages paid to each employee, the name of each board member, any political contributions made, the name of any lobbyist who's either employed with the private entity or who the private entity has contracted with, an accounting of how the grant money was spent by the private entity, on and on and on. And what this is meant to do is weed out the very thing that has led to the abuse of the community reinvestment program, conflicts of interest. Weed out people or make public So the public can research and know whether there are inherent conflicts of interest between the state lawmakers who are choosing who to award these multi-million dollar grants to and the people who receive those grants. That's not controversial. Did Democrats pass that bill? Of course not. Because they know that they're giving these grants to their friends and allies. They know that these grants are being abused. And I think that goes back to the subscriber show poll question I asked you yesterday is, do you trust the State Department of Commerce and the state of Washington to actually investigate now with having a preponderance of evidence that there's abuse within this program? Do you trust them to properly investigate it? 100% of you on Patreon at least said no. And it's because they're essentially investigating their friends and their political party. Now, Commerce Director Joe Wynn, you know, in our conversations, he seems to be very concerned about the state of things when he took over Commerce. He has a big business background. I'm going to trust but verify that he's going to do and is doing the things he says he's doing. So I think because of our personal relationship and the trust that I've built with him, I'm going to trust but verify. I'm not going to trust blindly. It's a follow-up. Okay, you said you're doing this. What are you doing? We handed you on a silver platter evidence of self-dealing in the community reinvestment program. What are you doing? How long is it going to take? Same with the AG's office. But Republicans tried to fix this before it even happened. And Democrats said, no, we don't want any oversight. So here's what Senate Minority Leader John Braun told us about what Republicans plan to do this coming session in light of our whistleblower report. He says that they'll introduce legislation to eliminate discriminatory housing programs that pick winners and losers based on race. We know of two of those right now in the state of Washington, the one we just discussed and the Covenant Homeownership Program. He said impose strict oversight and spending controls of state-funded nonprofits, which would be basically reintroducing the bills they've already introduced in the past, and enforce performance standards so assistance reaches real families, not insiders. So it's great. Republicans have their mind on this, but frankly, they can't do anything without the help and the buy-in of Democrats. So what is that going to take? I think one, exposure. These two bills that Travis Couture introduced, we didn't talk about on the show. There was so much going on. So we will be much more vocal about them, certainly this coming session. And my hope would be if the Attorney General's office, which has been in contact with our whistleblower, and Joe Wynn at Commerce are really serious about holding people accountable for abusing taxpayer funds, well, there's no reason they wouldn't support these bills if they're introduced again, right? Because now all the cards are out on the table. Now it goes from, oh, conservative claims about BIPOC groups abusing taxpayer money to undeniable proof and to members of the Black community speaking out, saying this money was supposed to get to us and did not. So if they really care about helping BIPOC communities, then yeah, making sure that there are guardrails on these programs would do that, would ensure that more of that money gets into the hands of people who you intended it for. So there should be no qualms about adding in layers of oversight, about adding in audits. So we'll see whether Democrats truly care about waste, fraud, and abuse, or whether they don't. Just insane that we even... And why are there even bills about that? Why is that not literally already built in to the contracts and the programs? That should be default. One political party shouldn't have to introduce bills to add oversight in how your money is spent. And I promise you, the state's in a budget crisis? No, the state has a crisis because it wastes money and it allows money to be wasted and abused. And if we were able to rein in some of these bloated contracts, the ones that aren't accomplishing anything or aren't accomplishing what they were, you know, meant to accomplish, I think that our budget crisis would be fixed like that. When you focus on the basics of government, this stuff doesn't happen as much. Wild. So we are going to have a lot of follow-ups. We're not letting this one go. As I said, I mean, we've barely scratched the surface of it. All right, coming up next, speaking of waste in government, King County's Regional Homelessness Authority, it has a budget shortfall. Shoot, gee, they won't be able to help the homeless. Oh, wait, they're already not helping the homeless. Have you taken the First Mark Challenge yet? If you have, let me know how it went and whether you ended up becoming a member of the First Mark family or not. I'd love to hear from you. We hear from so many undivided viewers and listeners who are so happy they finally listened to me. Have I ever led you astray, really? And took the First Mark Challenge because they're like, Brandy, I'm saving hundreds of dollars a month, which of course, carry the two, carry the three, is like thousands of dollars a year. And that's great because everybody needs insurance. It's just a fact of life. Why pay more for it than you need to, though, especially if you can still get the same great coverage or even better coverage that is more suited for your needs? And that really is, I mean, my husband finally got a new truck. It's been like, his old truck was coming to the end of its life. Let's just be honest. And somebody, I'm not saying who, a couple years ago, might have accidentally driven it into a cement pillar. Well, I really clipped it with a cement pillar in a parking garage. Not my fault, I don't think. But he needed a new truck, let's just say. And he finally got one. He's like, first thing he said, literally, we're driving for the first time his new truck. Oh, you got to call First Mark. I was like, yeah, I will. I'll give First Mark a call. Just drop him a note, say, hey, and then they'll take care of everything from there. They make everything so easy. I don't really know where that story was going, but I have to call First Mark, so it's fine. FirstMarkInsurance.com. They're family. We were thinking about them in the car on our first ride in the new truck. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right. So the failed King County Regional Homelessness Authority shouldn't even exist. Its budget should be zero because it shouldn't exist. So the Center Square has a headline out today that I'm actually happy to see. Don't care, literally don't care, that the King County Regional Homeless Authority plans 22% staff reductions amid a $4 million shortfall because they're way too bloated as it is. And much like the conversation we were just having, they haven't made the problem they were intended to solve any better. In fact, they've made it worse. So they should have to cut staff. They should get less money. And if their argument is going to be, well, oh my gosh, this will mean that we can do less for the homeless population, that might actually be a good thing. Because with the amount of money you've had, you've made more homeless people. So maybe if we give you less money, there will be less homeless people. Because the homeless industrial complex really is designed to keep people in homelessness. From the Center Square, the King County Regional Homeless Authority plans to implement a decrease in its overall workforce amid the projected 2026 budget shortfall. The decision comes at a time of anticipated federal funding cuts and budget challenges from Seattle and King County. Now, they attribute the shortfall to a few factors. Lapse of one-time pandemic-related federal funding, and then what's happening at the federal level with President Donald Trump, which I'll get to in a moment. But also on the pandemic thing, this is why you don't build pandemic funding into your overall budget and workforce. This was discussed across all sectors. It's like, you're getting one-time pandemic funds. Gee, maybe we shouldn't use those to pay for an employee. Maybe we shouldn't use those to grow because that money's going to go away. Crazy. In a governing board meeting on Monday, the CEO, Kelly Kinnison, said initial actions taken by the King County Regional Homelessness Authority to help address the budget shortfall included a hiring freeze and extremely limited travel. Why do you need to travel at all? Literally, there's no reason.
It's King County. It should be miles.
It's the King County Regional Homeless Authority. There's no reason you need any sort of travel budget whatsoever. says the agency also significantly reduced its use of consultants and moved some staff from less consequential positions to more operational roles. Why do you have positions that you would describe as less consequential? It's a taxpayer-funded program. If there's a job, that should mean that the job is necessary, not like, meh, optional. It also said in there that they have consultants. You have 100 full-time employees. As the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, why are we paying consultants for anything? So as I mentioned, they're blaming part of this on President Donald Trump, of course. And what they'll do is they'll say, oh, my, when homelessness inevitably gets worse next year, which it's getting worse every year, so why wouldn't it get worse next year? They'll say, well, that's because Donald Trump took money from us, and people will believe them. Of course, the president put out an executive order on homelessness and the homeless industrial complex, basically trying to rein this housing first policy in. The order directed funding to ensure that individuals camping on streets and causing public disorder and that are suffering from serious mental illness or addiction are moved into treatment centers, et cetera. So it really wanted to focus on, you know, getting away from funding things that are going to housing first and instead wants to fund things that are actually going to fix the problem. Center Square says King County Regional Homelessness Authority's new plan reduces its administrative budget by approximately $3 million and its administrative office from 106 full-time positions to 84. Kinnison said the agency expects to see a cap on federal spending for permanent supportive housing as part of President Trump's executive order, redirecting federal funding from Housing First. This means the agency could potentially lose $23 million in federal funds from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. But again, it's not, first of all, I do believe they should lose all their money. I've already said that, right? So they're going to very conveniently, if housing and homelessness increases, they're going to use this to blame President Donald Trump. But the underlying reason for their failure is very simple. The underlying reason for their failure is you have people like former Governor Jay Inslee, current Governor Bob Ferguson, and the former King County executive, Dow Constantine, who continue to claim that the fundamental cause of our homeless crisis is a lack of affordable housing, which we know it is not. Here's Dow Constantine in his final State of the County address in April.
We know too well that many of our neighbors simply do not have a safe place to call home. While many would like to argue otherwise, homelessness is at its core a housing issue. Thank you.
Ridiculous.
We're advancing multiple strategies to bring more people inside, including our Health Through Housing Initiative.
No agency that believes that should get a dime of money to address the homeless crisis. And part of the problem is we call it the homeless crisis. It's a drug crisis. And the other thing that I think this shows me is their freak out over this, right? Oh my God, our budget is going down and stuff. Is the fact that their budget every year should decrease. Because, right, they're tasked with solving the homeless crisis. And in effect, they said that they were going to get like virtually no homeless people in downtown Seattle like in the first 2 years. And of course, that didn't happen. Sorry, I have something in my eye. Their budget should decrease every year. Rather than planning for increases, should they not be planning for decreases? Because we should have a decreased number of homeless people on the streets. Their budget should be built in to gradually decrease over time. But it's not. Why? Because they don't intend to solve the homeless crisis. That was never the intent. If it was the intent, their budget would already be set to gradually reduce over time. It's just ridiculous. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First, if you are thinking about buying a home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com and feel free to pepper him with questions. He knows the market like the back of his hand. He's been doing it for a really long time in our area, and he can tell you a couple things. First of all, what's the state of the real estate market in your community? Give you that really local level advice and market analysis of what's going on, what homes are selling for, how long they're sitting, and his strategy for dealing with it. So whether it's, hey, we've got to, you know, have our listing really stand out. Here's why these other homes are sitting for so long, or they're not getting what they want. Maybe we have to do some cosmetic upgrades. And he's going to know what's worth it, you know, what juice is worth the squeeze on the front end and what's not. And he's going to hold your hand, literally or figuratively, you know, whatever you want. I'm sure Wes would literally hold your hand if it would make you feel better every step of the way in the home selling process. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones. So many Undivided viewers and listeners give us fantastic feedback on Wes. The number one thing they say is communication, communication, communication. He's just such a great communicator, which is great when you're going through what is, you know, one of the most important transactions in your life. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's see. We'll hold off on Unbelievable just momentarily. I think I'm going to fit in this Mercer Island story, and then we'll get to Unbelievable. Is that all right? This is just absolutely atrocious. So we told you it's been a few months ago now, about this scandal in the Mercer Island School District. So it involves a former teacher named Gary Twombly, and the gist of it from Investigative West was that you had this beloved, celebrated, awarded teacher, got a bunch of awards from the teachers union, and he was accused twice of sexual misconduct with students, but the district kept it secret from parents. And that was the underlying sort of story there, and it was very disturbing. Well, now it looks like they have a second case of this in the Mercer Island School District. This, a follow-up from Investigate West. I want people to know he's done this. Student alleges sexual misconduct by another Mercer Island teacher, high school English teacher Curtis Johnson, who abruptly retired in August, is the second teacher accused of sexual misconduct in recent months. And again, this is another instance based on the evidence collected by Investigate West of the school district seeking to cover it up. And some of this is truly disgusting, should lead to, I would honestly say that there should be laws against this. The amount of cover up, and how is there not? School districts are mandatory reporters. And the extent that Investigate West found that the school district went to cover up for this teacher, it should be a crime. And maybe it is. So let's read a little bit of this reporting. In August 2011, Curtis Johnston, pictured there left, was called to a meeting at the Mercer Island School District's administrative office. Rumors had been swirling that the 44-year-old high school English teacher was in a romantic relationship with a teenage student. The student's mom had voiced concerns to the principal, but feared she lacked evidence. Friends had grown suspicious, as did a church counselor who reached out directly to the school. The two had been seen leaving her car after a school charity event. She had become Johnston's teaching assistant halfway through the semester after a school trip overseas where they spent 2 days alone together while she was in the hospital. He was seen leaving prom with her. He attended her graduation party. Yet the purpose of the meeting, according to school records, was, quote, to protect Curtis and the district. Yes, you heard that correctly. So school records going back to August 2011, obtained by Investigative West, you see it on your screen there. The title was Personnel Meeting, 8311, District Office. It had a list of the people who would be present. And the first line of it is, goal of the day, to protect Curtis and the district. That's insane. Every person involved in that should be fired. Every person involved in that should be fired. And the evidence here is pretty overwhelming. So it says, when the former student signed up to travel to Cambodia and Vietnam in spring 2011 for a trip with 24 other students and teachers from Mercer Island High School, she was excited to see a different part of the world and get out of the Mercer Island bubble. But just after a few days in Cambodia, she got sick and had to be hospitalized. While the rest of the group continued to Vietnam, the student stayed behind with Johnston for 3 days. She had never had him as a teacher, but he was well known among students for his college advising business and for organizing international trips. She says they talked about photography, which they both enjoyed, and the student's recent struggles after losing her dad. The student recalled, I was in a state of feeling very lost. That's when he sort of swooped in. That's what predators do. Not long after, he invited her over to his apartment. At first, it felt like a friendship, she said, but about a month after they returned from Vietnam, they had sex. And you can't have sex, he raped her. I mean, you cannot consent in a situation like that. The two often drove to secluded parking lots or met at his apartment. She recalled him caressing her legs under his desk in a shared school office, a popular student hangout that was often referred to as the man cave. The office, a converted storage closet that only had one door and window, got its namesake for a period of time because only male teachers had desks there. The article goes on to say that Johnston later told the principal, John Harrison, that the student had driven him home that night. This is another time that they were out at a school event together, because he had 3 flat tires. After prom, Johnston was seen leaving with the student. It's another instance. She had undergone surgery the day before and wasn't feeling well. The student told Investigate West that they had gone back to his apartment, where she fell asleep because of all the meds she was on. Her mom said she stayed up for hours, calling her daughter repeatedly, worried something had happened. The next morning, the student told her mom that she had been at an after party. So what comes, understanding that is really important. If you can go back to that really quick, Nicole. To understand the lies that were told in the cover-up. So Johnston was seen by other students leaving prom with this student. This student says, we went back to his apartment. The mom was calling. Doesn't have any clue where the daughter is. That's what she tells Investigate West. And the student says, I lied to my mom the next day. I said I was at an after party. Now, during the investigation, this is what Johnston told the school principal. In July 2011, Johnston told Harrison, the principal, that the student's mom had asked him to drive her daughter home after prom. So he tells the school, nope, the mom told me to drive her home. He claims that he drove her straight home and knew her address because she had dog sat for him the month prior. During the drive, he gave her teacher dad-like advice because she was upset. So he tells the school, nope, I took her straight home. Mom asked me to. And the mom's saying, she didn't come home that night. I called her all night. And the girl's saying, yeah, I was at his house. School records show that the two came up with a list of talking points. So this is back to the school records about the meeting and how they would, quote, protect Curtis and protect the school. It says school records show the two came up with a list of talking points Johnston should stick to if other students or parents brought up their relationship. So some of the talking points included that it was just a rumor, that it was disappointing how kids were coming after him after he'd worked so hard, and that he was just a friend of the student's family. So again, this is literally from the list of talking points from school records. So if you're asked about this by other people, say it was just a rumor that started up at the end of the year. It's just crazy. It says not long after Johnston was disciplined, the student left for college and he flew to visit her for the first time. So there is so much ample evidence here that, again, if you believe what the girl is saying, and there's some other evidence in there that, like, he knew right where she lived and all of these things. Spent time alone with her on this trip overseas. And I think the really, like, absolute have him dead to rights is the personnel meeting that says goal of the day to protect Curtis and the district. No, your goal should never be to protect the district. Your goal should never be to protect the teacher. Your goal should be to get to the truth. That's what that first line should have said. Personnel meeting, goal of the day, get to the truth. And this is exactly why one of many, many reasons we need the Parental Bill of Rights. Here they are colluding behind the scenes, and I'm not saying the Parental Bill of Rights would stop every instance of a school district trying to collude behind the scenes and hide things from parents, because I'm sure that will still happen. But at least it lets parents know what's happened, that they have a right to know what's happening with their kids at school. They have a right to records. They have a right to all of these things. And one of the reasons you need it is because we have proof that school districts do stuff like this. Because this is the mindset of school districts. Saying we got to protect teachers. We have to protect the district. And the mindset of a school district isn't we have to protect kids. That's why it's so important that parents can protect kids. Because some school districts aren't interested in doing that. It's crazy. It's absolutely disgusting. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable next, continuing on the education theme. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in Washington State, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. We know that there's going to be more insane policies pushed on the housing front this session in Olympia. And so if this is your livelihood, maybe you're in retirement, you got one to two rental properties that, you know, you rely on for an income. It's very, very important. They have someone on your side who can help you navigate, make sure you're following all the rules and regulations, all of that, but also can be down in Olympia advocating on your behalf. Jeez, we could all use an advocate in Olympia. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. Make sure to come, go there, sign up to become a member. With that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. How about a word search for middle schoolers on identity and race? Ah, yes, it happened at Showalter Middle School. So we got a tip from a parent. This is a seventh grade ethnic studies class, which at this point, they shouldn't have. I'm sorry, because it's just too ripe for abuse. It's just too ripe for a teacher to push an ideological agenda on kids because the name of the class is ethnic studies. It's kind of a weird class for seventh graders too, isn't it? Like I can see older high schoolers, I can see college. It just doesn't seem like a sort of core curriculum type things. Yeah, history. So a mom, let me give you some background on this mom quick. She basically said that, and she's a very responsible mom, she let the school know, hey, here are some things like proactively, I want to opt my child out. And I want to opt them out of anything considered CRT, critical race theory. And so the school told her like, okay, you know, we'll let you know when we're going to have something so that you can have the time to opt your child out. Well, apparently not, because the worksheet that her child was given, this is in the Tukwila School District, Showalter Middle School, the worksheet that her child was given very much falls into the CRT category, and she did not get enough notice to be able to opt her child out of it. So let's see, Unit 2, Identity and Race Vocabulary. Match each vocabulary word to the correct definition. Write the number of the definition next to the word. You can use an online dictionary to check your answers. If there are unfamiliar words in the definition, look those words up too. Oh, that's great. So now they're going to, one of the words is structural racism. Mm-hmm. So they're going to take their old Google machine and be fed whatever the internet wants to tell them about structural racism. Great. So it's got it's like a word search, right? Well, not a word search. It's like a match. The word search is next. Mm-hmm. Match the definitions to the vocabulary words. Anti-blackness, bias, discrimination, equality, equity, individual racism, institutional racism, internalized racism, prejudice, privilege, structural racism. Let's read some of these. Let's see if I can match these up, shall we? Let's see how I am. Let's see. One, a preconceived judgment about a person or group of people, usually indicating negative bias. I'm assuming that one goes to like bias. Words kind of in the answer, I think. Let's see. Number three, racist policies and practices that give unfair advantage to white people over people of color. These policies often never mention any racial group, but the intent is to create disparity. It's like, okay, great. It's like, no, it doesn't even mention a racial group, but the intent of it is to create disparity. Five, the social advantages granted to and experiences by members of dominant groups at the expense of members of non-dominant groups. I mean, it is instilling in the heads of children that so much of their success or failure in life is dictated by the color of their skin. And that white people are inherently racist, they're inherently privileged. Six, the private racial beliefs held by and within individuals, usually absorbed via social, familial, political, and religious messages about race. Nine, a disproportionate weight in favor of or against an idea or thing. Eight, the overarching system of racial bias across institutions and society that systematically privilege white people and disadvantage people of color. Interesting. This one's interesting. 13, the specific kinds of discrimination faced by black individuals. The specific kinds of discrimination faced by black individuals. Well, I guess anti-blackness. That's probably what that would be. Yeah. Gotcha. Now, that one's bad. This next one is even worse. Why is it worse? Well, what's the point of it? ask yourself this, okay? First of all, as a learning exercise, I don't ever get the point of a word search. Because what is it teaching you? You read a word and then you go find the word. It's not like teaching you what the word means. The only intent of this can be getting this word in your head. Drilling it into your head, because I'm reading it. Anti-blackness. Now I'm going to say it a million times as I try to find it. Anti-blackness. 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 Oh, there it is. Anti-blackness. And then I might think, well, what is that? I got to go find a definition of that, and I need to figure out what it is. So they literally have these seventh graders on a word search, searching for accomplice. First of all, in this context, identity and race vocabulary. What's an accomplice? Oh, you're complicit. Accomplice, ally, anti-blackness, bias, BIPOC, defensive, discrimination, equality, equity, history, impact, institutional, intent, internalized, interpersonal, power, prejudice, privilege, supremacy, systemic, trauma, whiteness. Like, imagine you're a seventh grader at school searching the word whiteness. Whiteness.
I like that.
Where's whiteness? Where's the word whiteness?
Those go together too. Supremacy, systemic trauma, whiteness.
Yep. It's just, I mean, that this is insane stuff. And the mom told you, Nicole, that she either didn't get notified about it, or was it just too
it was
quick,
too
like
later.
At school that day, I mean, or something like that?
Her kid came home with those. So
yes. So her kid came home with those. She didn't. So I'm sorry. She didn't get a heads up. And she wanted a heads up on anything critical race theory.
So then they said they'd be sure to notify her in the future. But really what they did, well, really what the teacher did was just said, here's everything I'm doing for the rest of the year.
Yep. I mean, they know that this is CRT. And this is, it shouldn't even be taught in class. Because what is this teaching? It's not teaching anything. You can make an argument about the first one, that you're teaching these definitions or whatever it is. But the second one, a word search, it's just meant to implant those words in the brains of impressionable young people. Disgusting. Just disgusting.
I do like what the mom also presented as an option for her child to do as an alternative. She said she would like him to go to the library and study the Constitution and memorize the preamble.
Gosh.
And they said, well, we'll work on something. And she goes, nope, I don't trust you and what you'll come up with, and nothing will be educational. So I would just like him to study the Constitution.
Just go
said,
there.
Okay.
Absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. All right. We'll get to some national news coming up next. First, I love this. Valentine Roofing, they also do custom holiday lights, which I told Nicole, I said, ask Valentine, send me some pictures
of
custom holiday
lights. Yeah,
they're
out of the office this week, but they're working on it.
Oh my gosh. Of course, the number one thing they do is roofing. They are. They're out of the office, all around, probably installing custom holiday lights, let's be honest. But so if you need a new roof, reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. They can help you with a new roof, obviously. They can also install custom holiday lights, but they do gutters, cleaned or installed, attic insulation, even exterior cleaning or custom holiday lighting. You can count on the pros at Valentine. And they have flexible financing options, including zero down and 0% interest. Taking care of your home has never been easier. Schedule your free estimate by calling 206 Roofing. Again, call 206 Roofing. And please tell them that you heard about them on Undivided. All right, some major news. National news, yes, but I think has the most significant impact on the state of Washington and on Seattle. So Amazon announcing that it is going to move forward with some major job cuts. Now, we're hearing reports that the actual total number could be 30,000, which is wild. But this from Deadline. Amazon confirms it's slashing 14,000 jobs, anticipates more layoffs in 2026. So Amazon has confirmed it's laying off 14,000 people in a major reduction of its corporate workforce, citing the advance of AI. You know, this is one of those things, before we even get into it, who is the guy that does dirty jobs? Mike Rowe. He was saying, he was like, we're telling people, you know, go become a programmer, go do all these things. He said, AI is going to wipe out all those jobs. And think about it. We've been sending people, learn how to code, learn how to code, learn how to code. Remember that? I mean, that was the thing for years. Like, go learn all this, go over to tech, get it. It's going to pay dividends. No, they're all going to lose their jobs. Because his point was, you know, you're never able to teach a computer how to go in and like clear a toilet, you know, clog or become a plumber or a roofer or whatever it is. And he has such a good point about that. So there's a lot of people who I think were pushed into these tech jobs thinking this is the way to go, and maybe not. So anyway, citing the advance of AI, looking ahead to 2026, the company said it expects there will be additional places where we can remove layers, increase ownership, and realize efficiency gains. In a memo shared publicly today, the senior VP of People Experience and Technology at Amazon said the world is changing quickly. This generation generation of AI is the most transformative technology we've seen since the internet, and it's enabling companies to innovate much faster than ever before. We're convinced that we need to be organized more leanly with fewer layers and more ownership to move as quickly as possible for our customers and our business. So I think we'll wait for the breakdown. Apparently starting today, people are supposed to start to get the notices that their job has been cut. Amazon does have 50,000 corporate and tech workers in its Seattle headquarters. I think there's another 12,000 or so in Bellevue. And this isn't the only tech company that's been laying people off. Microsoft laid off 15,000 people since May. So this has been happening a lot this year. So also other areas as well. Nicole's pulling some headlines all from this week. So, of course, the Amazon headline, UPS announcing mass layoffs, 48,000 job cuts at UPS. That one actually surprises me.
Right before holidays? That's
right,
really crazy.
Right before the holidays. And also, people aren't buying less stuff online. They're buying more stuff online. Right. So now I'm open to what, I wonder if any of that's with tariffs or anything. So I'll have to dig into that one a little bit more. Target cutting its corporate workforce. Meta to lay off 100 employees in Seattle. And then on Sundays with Subscribers, right before we came on the show today, we were doing an interview with the CEO of Heritage. Heritage Distilling in Washington State, a Pacific Northwest company that's announcing it's going to close all its distillery locations in Washington and Oregon, its tasting rooms rather, and try to sort of change up its workflow because of a variety of reasons, taxes and the business climate and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, some of it is you can't really blame anything per se, because like with AI, it's an advance in technology. It's not the economy. It's not like, you know, the economy is doing bad or taxes and all that stuff. It's like, we don't need those jobs anymore. And so what can you say? I mean, if there's advancements that allow you to do those things without having a person there, who's going to blame any company for getting rid of that position? You're not just going to keep it because, oh, we're keeping someone in a job. In the Heritage instance, it's a lot of it is because of the taxes and the business climate. But the taxes and the business climate in Washington State don't help either. You know, they don't help either. So
maybe
wild.
This is what we need to kind of snap back to. So I went to the doctor recently, and the doctor was telling me that he was getting ready to retire, and his son was going to go into being a doctor. And then he said, you know what, Dad, I can make more money in tech. And so he had switched and went over to tech. But maybe this is what we need to get people back into these positions that we actually need people in.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe this will be like a swing the other way or something like that. The only the other problem I do see, though, is we still have this mindset in a lot of jobs and industries right now where you have to, in order to get promoted, you have to have a college degree. And we've got to get out of that mindset.
Yeah, because 100%.
Yeah, I know somebody that was overlooked for a job because she doesn't have a degree. And I'm like, it doesn't make sense. She's been there longer, and the person that's going to get it is going to be somebody with a degree.
Should be competency.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got to get it. There's got to be a whole shift in mindset and education and the way that we think about jobs in today's world. So maybe this will be the start of that.
I agree. And I feel bad for people. I don't want anybody to lose their job. But if your job has been made redundant by a new technology, it kind of is what it is. Maybe they can expand into other areas. So that is going to be
a conversation about who they're going to blame when things go wrong.
Yeah.
When it comes to AI, you can't blame AI for things going wrong.
So you can blame the companies that create it.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So you're going to have to, it's going to have to be this like rolling how to blame. There's always going to be somebody there to blame. So
yeah. And
it'll be interesting.
One of the things that's like, again, I feel bad for people who lose their job, especially before the holidays or whatever it is. And there are other tech companies laying people off. So it's not like you can just jump ship over to somewhere else because they're not doing a lot of hiring right now. But also the impact is just such a ripple effect whenever it's Amazon, Microsoft, one of those big companies. I talk about it all the time. I talk about this infrastructure that it supports in Seattle, and Seattle's downtown is already not doing great. So if a lot of those jobs come from Seattle, you know, fewer people dining, fewer people at bars, like fewer people at grocery stores, and you name it. And so it has an impact across the economy, which is why I'm always so opposed to lawmakers who target out Amazon for taxation or vilify Amazon. It's like, do you really not realize the economic impact that that company has on our city? So crazy. All right. Let's see here. Let's get to our daily subscriber show poll, shall we? I was just sorry. I was a little distracted for a second because I was looking at whether I had some breaking news there. And then, Nicole, can you take out? We have a redundant
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. On our subscriber show poll, I asked you guys because I was curious sort of what the impact of this will be. Do you work in the tech sector or do you have a job that directly depends on the strength of the tech sector in Washington state? Yeah, I mean, we rely on tech, but we don't have a job that depends on the strength of the tech sector in Washington state. And I already know Nicole's answer to that. But I wanted to gauge this because I wanted to know for you guys how personal some of these decisions are. But also, I think it shows us, you know, the impact that the tech sector has. 15% of you say yes, that you do work in the tech sector or you have a job that directly depends on the strength of the tech sector. I'll be honest, I didn't think it was going to be that high. I thought it would be probably 5 or 10%. Patrick, I've been in tech here for 30 years. The state has turned on the tech companies and the tech companies voted for these people too. Interesting to watch. Yeah, for a lot of the layoffs, you can directly blame the state. I don't know that you could directly blame the state for this. Alex said, kind of, we work with local restaurants making websites and online ordering. What has affected us is the new sales tax for services like design and websites. Tony, I'm in tech and tech adjacent, such as medical devices, streaming media, et cetera. Washington State and especially Seattle have really hammered the industry with regulations and new taxes. Lots of the former coworkers are struggling now. On the other hand, so many creative techies voted for all this insanity. So while depressing, it's not that surprising. And they were the first let go. They're like a special form of stupid. They know a lot about a few things, but they think they know a lot about a lot. Yeah, that is literally... I think that's kind of podcasters, too. You know a lot about a few things, but you have to pretend to know a lot about a lot. I try to pretend as little as possible. Let's see. Bookworm, no, but I do have 3 acquaintances and over 50 who were laid off from different tech sector jobs in Seattle more than 9 months ago and have not been able to find work yet again. Which is crazy because that used to be such a marketable thing. But now you have all these layoffs happening, so you can't just... Man, that is really how quick that changed from tech being the absolute industry you need to get into to it being somewhere where you could get laid off and not even be able to find a job. We know someone who got laid off in tech. They didn't even get a, They didn't even get a severance, which is insane for the tech sector. Wild. Let's see. I'll read a couple more. Sarah, I said no, but my husband is a software developer AI researcher. Well, then that's a yes. And a lot of my patients live in Washington, so I do get concerned when there are layoffs and such because I worry about my husband's jobs and my patients leaving the area, which can impact my job security long term. Yeah, we are really tied to tech here in the Pacific Northwest. Okay, let's see. Do you want me to read an ad read here? You want me to go straight into comments? I'm a little confused. The show sheet's a little messy today.
No, it's up to you. Would you like to do it after comments or before?
We'll do it after. Okay. Why not? On the Soup Ladies, Moon Goddess, these spoiled brats weren't saying a word. So this is on the Soup Ladies being harassed by Antifa. These spoiled brats weren't saying a word when criminals came into our country without due process. We need to flood Soup Ladies with raving reviews. Yes, I agree. Please do that for them. They're so sweet. Eileen Miller, this angers me beyond belief. The Soup Ladies don't deserve this kind of treatment. Nicole, you were laughing at me for being so wound up about it.
Oh, you were wound.
I was wound tight. It's like...
I mean,
makes
obnoxious.
You want to punch someone. It's obnoxious.
Like I said, what are you doing with your life if you're just attacking little ladies?
Literally.
That are making soup.
Just disgusting. And that annoying girl's voice on her Instagram thinking she was doing such a courageous thing. Soup ladies, huh? Here's their information. Like, oh, weird. Disappointing.
Right.
I mean, what an absolute disgusting troll.
And you just want a bunch of other hateful people to say, good job.
It's awful. And this person bragging that they've left 20 voicemails. Get a job. Get a job. Eileen Miller, this angers me beyond belief. The Soup Ladies don't deserve this kind of treatment. Ollie Sasquatch, this kind of stuff is why I can't stand the left anymore. Amy Dawson, the Soup Ladies have the biggest hearts and have helped thousands over the years of people working all types of jobs. I'm beyond disgusted to see this happening. And now I'm also hungry because you know I love soup. And their soup, they were serving a chicken tortilla, like a real nice thick one, hearty one. And then, gosh, some sort of veggie one that was like, it had beef in it too. It looked so good. I don't think they had any vegetarian options there now that I think about it. And why would you? There ain't no vegetarians there at ICE. Let's see here on state lawmakers reacting to our whistleblower report. Little Miss J, I'm curious if more Washington voters are going to keep believing in the lies that keep coming. Probably. Joanne Awaldson, state auditor, has already bent the knee. And this really would be a big part of it, the state auditor's job.
Leland Taylor, the lack of oversight is a feature, not a bug. It has to be, because they introduced bills. First of all, it should be part of it without a bill, right? But they explicitly rejected bills that would have added the oversight. So it has to be a feature and not a bug. Bill Swick over on Patreon, one more time, the grifting Democrats stop scrutiny. Who votes these criminals into power? And look, I think...
Your neighbors.
Yes, but I also think whenever you have one party in power, you're going to have the same result. Mm-hmm. It is this, there's no checks and balances. Checks and balances have to exist. And if it were Republicans all in power, I promise you, government is corrupt. It just is. I think the tendency of government is power hungry and corrupt. And people across the political spectrum will abuse systems, will use systems to benefit themselves if they feel like there's no one who is in a place in a position to call them out on it. And that's the position Democrats are in Washington state. So let me be clear that I think that my kind of rule is to assume corruption unless proven otherwise with the government. I don't care who it is.
I definitely think, I would like to believe, I'm some of the people that we work with often, I don't believe would do some of the evil things that are happening here.
I'm not saying every politician.
Not every politician. No, I'm not saying every politician. Like this, but money does make people crazy.
It does. Yeah. And it's just, and why even give them an opportunity to abuse a system, right? Mm-hmm. Why even put that big chunk of money in front of them and say, hey, what you do with it is your business. It's like, okay, you know, it's just wild.
But it was a plan.
Like, yeah. They 100%.
Right. They asked for this, got it, and had planned it.
And there's nothing on the Republican side that exists in history comparable to this situation with DEI. That you have this situation where, oh, we're calling for race and social justice, and you're just pushing money out to people based on immutable characteristics. Mm-hmm. Like, unless I'm mistaken, I don't know of any sort of massive push like this that was supported by the Republican Party at any point in history. Mm-hmm. And so you have these blank checks written to these ideologically driven organizations, and it's they're being abused. Mm-hmm. On the King County Regional Homelessness Authority planning huge cuts, Andy says, woohoo! Layoffs, in this case, those are positive layoffs, A+. Now, they should be laying people off because there's fewer homeless to help. Mm-hmm. That's obviously not the reason, but Big Princess, there is absolutely no incentive to eliminate homelessness. The incentive is to perpetuate it. I agree. On the Mercer Island sex scandal cover-up, just disgusting. Mike Whitman, going to be sewing air tags and or GPS tracker in my kid's backpack from now on. You should. 100%, whether it's for a variety of reasons, but you could certainly use it to follow them to a teacher's house if that's where they go.
What's going on in Mercer Island?
I don't know. Let's see. Gary Fool, a $20 super chat. What is this little thing next to it? I can't. Something, an angry, sad hippo emoji.
It doesn't copy over, so I think that's Miranda.
Miranda trying
that's
to describe it. Is that Miranda trying to describe angry, sad hippo emoji with epic fail text? Okay, thanks. Great. Racist worksheet for middle schoolers. MKW fan. The worksheet is an ad for homeschooling. Oh, I agree. On other super chats and comments, Carl Beach. I'm so happy we finally did the first mark challenge. We are saving so much money on all our insurance. Yay. Carrie, we need you to send us a longer statement.
Explanation. How much did you save?
And then I'll use it on our ads, if that's okay with you. Matt, $5 super chat. A computer can never be held accountable. Therefore, a computer must never make a management decision. That was in a 1979 IBM training manual. Papa Woody, $2 super chat. No more soup for you. Yes. I want them to go out, hand Antifa, like pretend to hand Antifa soup, and they say, no soup for you. Let's just do that. Literally, we'll go out with brown paper bags, because that's what the soup Nazi from Seinfeld, he was in a brown paper bag and he handled it to whatever her face was. I can't remember
Elaine.
Her name. Elaine. No soup for you. So you know it's cold out there and they'll take it, right? We'll just be like, oh, we'll cover my identity.
Aren't they already eating from soup kitchens?
Probably, yes. From stealing it from other people.
From
so we'll have them line up and they'll be so excited. Be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get soup. And then I'll, no No soup for you.
No soup for you.
This is going to be great. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, Zach Abraham and the team at Bulwark Capital are having another one of the last one of the year. There are Know Your Risk portfolio reviews. So it'll be a review preview live webinar November 20th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Bulwark's final webinar of the year will discuss the impact, speaking of, AI is having on the market. And their preview for 2026, that's going to be very, very relevant. You're tied up in tech stocks, whatever it is. AI, need to know what's happening with it because it will have a profound impact on the market. Also, how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios, and a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register now for the free November 20th webinar. So do that. Again, it's November 20th, 3:30 p.m., but you can register right now. If you just go to the website, knowyourriskpodcast.com, it'll pop up in the middle of the screen. You don't have to do anything. You just click on it. And then while you're there, schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, President George Washington. He was on the USS. Was it the USS George Washington? Yeah. I've been on the USS George Washington.
You have?
Daryl served on the USS George Washington.
Wow.
Yes, my best friend Johnny was on the USS George Washington, and Daryl was just in this morning. He's a Navy veteran, and he served with Johnny.
Yeah.
My best friend. That's how I know Daryl. On the USS George Washington in Yokosuka, Japan. So anyway, President Trump was in Japan, and I just love this moment. Is this where he comes down on the aircraft carrier thing?
No.
Nicole.
Well, that's a visual, so I pulled him just telling him them.
Okay,
loves
I'll pull
them.
In a second. But there's this great moment where he comes down on the deck, and all the troops are in waiting, and the deck goes, and it's two fighter jets, big old missiles on the, and it's Trump. And all the soldiers are losing it, and they love it. I'm like, how can you not love this guy? And he loves them too.
The sailors in the ship sacrificed so much for our country and the president. And I will tell you, the president standing right up here loves you. I respect you and I love you. And I'm giving everything I have to make sure that when you get home, you find an America that is safe and proud and sovereign and free.
Love that. Love it. He was having a great time in Japan. Japan gave us, donated a bunch of cherry trees to Trump's beautification. He got the putter that Shinzo Abe, who was assassinated, who was like Trump's best friend from all the foreign governments, gave him a putter that he used, and Trump was so touched. It was so nice. It was a nice moment, no moment of sanity. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A reminder, we do not have a show on Thursday, so tomorrow is our Halloween episode. Is your costume scary, Nicole?
To some people.
Oh, to some people.
I mean, to our audience, probably, but to most, probably not.
Interesting. Okay. All I can tell you is that my costume involves quite a bit of makeup.
Okay.
Quite a bit of, it's very transformative, if you will.
Okay.
I shall not look like myself.
I'm excited.
But I'm going to be very casual tomorrow. I think that's a good hint.
Oh.
Quite casual.
Okay. That's taking away from my first thought.
Okay. What was your first thought?
Trump.
Okay, no. All right. So we'll see you for our Halloween episode tomorrow.